This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. There is still a strong push in Congress to spend more federal dollars on early childhood education, and that push may rest on both a judgment about the lifestyles parents might prefer and an error about what federal funding might mean to the market for early childhood education. Cato's Colleen Hrancic recently testified on Capitol Hill on the subject. She explained some of the errors of this new congressional push. Colleen, you recently testified on Capitol Hill, and there is a clamor, a desire by some people in the federal government to get the feds more deeply involved in what they describe as early childhood education. Can you characterize that effort?
It seems to come up every couple of years at the least, and the current push, President Biden in his recent budget proposal, had much more funding for early childhood care. A couple years ago, he had a universal preschool program. The new one's a little bit different, I believe. But the hearing on Capitol Hill was just in general about investing in early childhood care, not necessarily that budget. It was interesting because the assumption is definitely that the best path forward is to just throw more money at this issue, and that's going to solve it. And getting the federal government more involved is going to solve it. But I don't think there's any evidence that that ever is the case, that getting the federal government more involved solves any problems.
What are the specific problems that these members of Congress feel that they're addressing?
Well, they talked about the high cost of early childhood care, especially. And one of the points that one of the congressmen made, or one of the members of the committee made, was we kind of conflate early childhood education and daycare and early childhood care. And they're not really the same thing. And I think that that happens pretty frequently. So if parents are working, then clearly they need to find some sort of solution for where their children will be. And then the educational aspect of it is really a separate issue. And they get lumped together a lot of times. So there was one member who was asking questions along those lines, like, how do we separate that out? But for the most of it, it was just about getting the government more involved and putting more money into it and having more programs. And this is somehow going to solve the fact that it's very expensive to have full-time care for young children. But typically when the government gets involved, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the charts where the sectors that the government gets more involved in are also the sectors that get more and more expensive, whereas the sectors that the government is less involved in are the sectors where prices have gone down. Think computers or cars, things like that. There's not really empirical evidence that getting the government involved is going to solve the problems that they think it's going to solve in terms of cost or even quality.
Is this a demand-side subsidy that they're trying to create, or are they trying to increase the supply? To the extent that they're conflating these things, early childhood education and childcare for young children, which side of the equation are they trying to goose here? Is it supply or demand?
I think both. I think that they think if they give an early childhood system more money, that they'll get more providers and also more parents taking advantage of it. One of the messages that came through very clearly was the expectation that parents should be working in the workforce versus being home with their kids. They cited increased GDP and decreased cost for businesses, as if the goal of public policy should be to make it less expensive for businesses to have workers because now they can put their kids in daycare. So that was one of the striking things about it. But on the flip side, it was also on the supply side where they think that if they are putting more money into this area of early childhood, that they'll get more providers because then there'll be higher salaries available for them. I think in reality, typically what happens when the government gets involved, they put more rules and restrictions in place that actually reduces the supply of providers. And that's what we've seen all over the place. And that's what's making, in a lot of cases, these care decisions for parents so expensive, is the government rules that are in place that are making it hard for them to find providers.
You've written papers about this. What is the evidence on the long-term benefits to young people of being in some sort of early childhood education program?
There's not really any consistent evidence one way or another. There were some back in the 60s and 70s. There were these very tiny programs, and I'm talking less than 60 kids in these programs. And so supporters of widespread early childhood care or school, they point to these programs and extrapolate and say, well, this program worked really well for these kids. Therefore, any money that we invest in early childhood care or education is going to net these ridiculous benefits where they will claim 4, 7, even 13 times for every dollar spent. But the evidence isn't there because anytime these are tried on a wider scale, which of course the federal government is about the widest scale that we have, you have, you know, maybe some short-term effects coming right out of the program where kids are reading better. But over years, there's fade out. And in more recent years, for example, there was a big study in Tennessee in 2022 was released, and they actually found negative effects for the kids. It was a randomly assigned and a negative effect for the kids who were in the program. So I think that shocked a lot of people who were involved. I mean, the researchers themselves were shocked because they were full supporters. They completely expected that they were going to show great results from this program, and they didn't. And a lot of it is because it's the nature of the beast. When you have a large-scale system, you're going to have a lot of rules that are in place, and those rules don't give teachers flexibility, don't give families flexibility, and just don't result in the type of program that does benefit kids.
If the feds were serious about promoting young people having a place to be during the day, whether or not their parents are working, what might that look like?
Well, if you look at Head Start, for example, which is a big federal government early childhood care education program, right now they're spending over $12,000 per child. I'm not saying they should have that program, but as long as they do have that program, it would make a lot more sense to kind of voucherize it and let the money follow kids to the provider that works best for them rather than the current way it is where it's going to certain centers and certain models and parents don't have as much flexibility as they could. So the results of Head Start tend to be very poor. There's a lot of money going into it. Again, it's one of those ones where in the very beginning, it'll have some positive effects where kids are reading better in kindergarten, but the results will fade out by third grade. So it's a lot of money to spend for not a lot of results.
You said that some lawmakers were pointing to increased GDP as a reason to get involved in this. And I like GDP. I think countries that do well and have happy people have higher GDPs. But it's not the single measure that we ought to use when determining whether or not the government ought to be involved in some area of endeavor.
Or in for parents determining whether to stay home with their kids or get back into work. You know, it was just this, it felt like a commoditization of children and parents that the only thing that mattered was getting the parents back to work so that businesses can thrive and the government can have more tax money to spend. And that was just a very odd aspect of the hearing, I thought.
So in terms of your proposal about how this ought to move forward, what are some policies that at least the federal government ought to adopt or ought to get rid of to do more to empower parents to make those kinds of decisions?
Right. Well, so one of my kids right now, she's getting ready to go to college for the first time next year. And so we're very tuned into the FAFSA debacle, which is the government's free application for federal student aid. But a lot of schools, this is such a big program that a lot of schools use it even for their private awards. So the federal government, you know, started this process of revamping it a couple years ago, and it's been a disaster. And there's huge delays. Schools still don't have their decisions out, making it hard for students and families to commit to colleges. It's making it hard for colleges to figure out what next year is going to look like. And I think it's just such a great example of what happens when the federal government gets involved. You know, the bigger you are, the harder you fall. So when the federal government gets involved in something and it doesn't work, the effects are enormous. They're widespread. They're nationwide. Whereas, you know, the more proper role is this is states, localities, and families should be deciding, making these decisions for themselves. And, you know, Judge Brandeis years ago called states the laboratories of democracy. When states do programs, then other states learn from them. They learn what works and what doesn't work. And families have a much easier time getting their wants and needs addressed at the state level than they do at the federal level. So I think the bottom line, the main thing is just it's not really going to help anybody if the federal government gets more involved in this area, and it could hurt a lot of people.
Since 2020, since the pandemic, and I suppose even a little bit earlier than that, perhaps 2018, 2019, we saw this sort of acceleration of educational choice, parental choice in education. My state is currently having a fight over that right now. And yet at the federal level, it seems like we're seeing a move in the opposite direction.
Right. It's kind of a tragedy, really, if this happens where right as states are taking a much more student-centered approach and giving families the flexibility to take their education dollars to a wide variety of providers, if the federal government were to get more involved, we know from history that that's going to drive more institutionalization of early childhood education because the entities, the providers that will be able to navigate that system are likely to be the secular center-based ones, which most parents don't want. And they're the ones that don't work as well. Like a lot of this one, the early childhood, the preschool programs, the pre-K, the ones that have the worst results are the ones that are in elementary schools. They're in environments that aren't designed for young children. And that's one of the takeaways that we're seeing at some of the state programs. And when the federal government gets involved, you know that's what's going to happen because there's going to be rules attached to it that are going to make the smaller, more independent providers unable to participate. So it's going to drive out providers that parents want. We see that in Chicago, even at the local level, this happens where when you get a localized universal program, it drives out some of the independent providers, many of whom have the programs that actually work better for kids, the programs that have more free play and more focus on the child rather than the whole group instruction, which is really just doesn't work at all for kids that age.
Colleen Hrancich is a policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast basically anywhere you like. And thank you for listening.